Okay, welcome everybody. I know many of you, but not all of you. I met even more earlier this morning in Emirat Hashem. Over the next few days and weeks, of course, we'll all get to know each other well. Those of us who already know each other well, we'll get to know each other even better. And it's really a tremendous privilege and pleasure to welcome you here into the Beis Medrash. Many of you, whether it was this past year as part of the decision-making process or at other points in your life, have been in this Beis Medrash before, but it was very, very different. Because even those of you who have spent time here, previously were only here as guests. But this is the first time you're in the Beis Medrash and even learning a little bit of Torah as Talmidim of the Gush of Yeshivat Har Etzion. And that is a very, very special experience. And I appreciate the opportunity to be the first one who has a chance to learn a little Torah with you as we are all exhausted and tired from the long flight and early arrival. So some Torah is a way of hopefully framing not only this opening Shabbos, but hopefully what will be an opening 40-day Zman, the Elul Zman, and hopefully the beginning of an incredible and transformative year. Elul is a very interesting phenomenon because on the one hand, it is the end of the year, it's the last month of the Jewish calendar year, but certainly when you think of the Yomim Noraim season, and especially if you think of yeshiva life, El is the kickoff. It's the beginning of everything. And in many ways, it really is both. If if it's not yet too early to start with a sports analogy, but it's if you end the first half well, that's an important thing, but you also want to start the second half well. And the way we end this past year really is very much a siman and a helpful start to how we will begin this coming year. And I think it's not a coincidence, and it's certainly not inconsequential, that as often, if not always, but certainly often, maybe even always, the case that the Shabbos of the beginning of the month of Elul coincides with Parshas Re'eh. And I'd like to share with you briefly three ideas that struck me as I was thinking about your imminent arrival, as I was sat down to learn a little bit late last night, thinking about your imminent arrival and the incredibly amazing opportunity that you have for this coming year and this auspicious occasion of both the beginning of Rosh Chodesh Elul, the beginning of your time in Yeshiva, and the Parsha. And I'd like to share with you briefly three ideas that jumped out at me from the Parsha, which I think, at least for me, frame very much what are not only my dreams and the other Rebbeim's dreams for you this year, but I hope will also be helpful advice and guidance as you consider this incredibly exciting, but certainly demanding opportunity that lies in front of you. The Parsha begins, as we know, Re'eh Anochi Nosein Lefnechem Hayom Bracha Uklala. God says, Hashem says, right before you, it's all in front of you. Bracha or klala. Es ha-bracha asher tishmu el mitzvos Hashem elokeichem asher anochi mitzavcha eschem hayom. If you listen to me, all the blessings, all the bracha. Ba'klala im lo tishmu el mitzvos Hashem elokeichem v'sartem en ha-derech asher anochi mitzavcha eschem hayom l'leches achrei elohim acherim asher lo yedatem. But unfortunately, the opposite also awaits you. If you, Rachmana Litzlan, make the wrong choices, so those also have consequences, and that is of a curse. In essence, to boil down these opening psukim can be summarized in one word. Choice. The opening of Parshas Re'eh, the opening of this Shabbos, of this Zman, and really for your year, highlights the importance of decision and making the right choices. It's really a perfect time and a perfect parsha to begin this stage of your life. It's all about choices, and as the Torah stresses, and as we get older and more mature, we realize in all areas of our life that choices have consequences. At some point, and I hope you've all begun to have that experience even before now, but it's part of the maturing process to realize the consequences of decisions. Part of the blissful naivete of youth is to think that things will always be okay, and mommy and daddy, hopefully, if we're blessed with loving parents and a good supportive environment, things always kind of work. As you get older, part of maturing is to realize that choices and decisions have consequences. And that is what the Torah outlines for us right off the bat. We all want, I have no doubt, I say this generally, but especially about the people I'm looking at right now, we all want to make the right decisions. The question is how? Is there a winning strategy? What can we use as a strategy or some kind of advice to help increase the odds that we'll make the right choices that lead to bracha and avoid, God forbid, the other choices that would lead to klala? So I want to share with you a short, you may even say it's a pithy, but I think it's actually quite profound, etymological insight suggested by Rav Shimshon Rafal Hirsch in his commentary right in the opening of our parsha. And as Rav Hirsch often does, those of you who may be familiar with Rav Hirsch's writings, you know this to be the case. And if not, Emir Tashem, over your lifetime, you'll have many opportunities to study Rav Hirsch and his commentary on the Torah. He very often will ground larger essays, although in this case there is no follow-up essay, but great and large essays or insights into etymological insights. He was very big, really one of the greats that we have, a short list, but he's on it, of who focused on the etymology and the shoresh and trying to understand biblical Hebrew and where certain words come from, and often building profound hashkafic and machshava ideas based on that. So he doesn't develop it, he has the core insight, but I would like to use that as a springboard for our first point. Rav Hirsch suggests very creatively, why is it that the good stuff is called bracha and the bad stuff is klala? Again, these are words we've known for so many years, we take them for granted. But why is it that bracha is good and klala is bad? So he suggests the following insight. He says, bracha can be understood milashon brecha. Movil mayim. A brecha is a spring, a running stream of water. Bracha hi matzav shel hitpatchut l'loma atzor shel shikshug mitkadem. Bracha, he says, is from a lashon of a running spring of water that's flowing without anything stopping it. What's klala? Why is a curse? Why are the bad things called klala? So he suggests perhaps kal v'natul kol mishkal. It's light. It doesn't have any weight, any consequence. It's shallow, worthless, without weight. Now, what is he getting at? He doesn't develop it more than that. What is he getting at? So I'd like to suggest, I think this is really what he means. And that is the following. It's really framing, as the Torah itself is, how we understand the consequences of decisions. We all understand, intuitively, that in life, there are certain big decisions. To come to yeshiva. Which yeshiva? Right, those are some of your more recent big decisions. Who to marry? What community to move to? There are a few of these in everyone's life, where Emir Tashem, you'll one day be old and with lots of grandchildren, and you'll be able to look back on big decisions. Things that you made, hopefully the right decisions, which led to great and positive consequence. But the real key to success, what separates those who are truly successful in life from those who are at best merely mediocre, is how you view the other decisions. What attitude you bring to all of the many, many more other decisions that make up your life. If you view them as a kal, if you view them as light, if you view them as small, as non-impactful, then the kal will be a klala. If you view the decisions as light and inconsequential, it's true. Many, if not most of them, may seem and may in fact be inconsequential at first. But over time, they add up. They accumulate. And maybe they weren't a big deal at first, but you look back on things, a wasted month, a wasted year, other missed opportunities. And very often, the people who live with regret will tell you, and there is nothing in life worse than regret, But the people who live with regret most often will tell you it wasn't the big decisions that they got wrong, but it was not taking seriously enough all the little decisions. If you view it as kal, it will be a klala. But the opposite, of course, is also true. If you view all of these, quote, small decisions as actually being weighty, as of consequence, if you realize that every one of them are really a brecha, then you will see like a spring, the payoff is downstream. Maybe not imminently, maybe not immediately, maybe not right away. But the more seriously, the more thought you put into all the little decisions, like a brecha, each one flows. One good decision leads to another good decision, which leads to another good decision. And ultimately, like a stream, downstream, we see tremendous bracha. We see the payoff. The bracha continues to flow. Character, the kind of person that you are, the kind of people that you want to be, character is formed by the repetition and reinforcement of little decisions. It's not formed by the big ones. It's expressed in the big ones. You hear what I'm saying? I know you're all tired, but please listen. This is good, if I say so myself. Character is formed by the little decisions, repeated and reinforced day in and day out, week after week, month after month. There'll be big moments. You have to make a big decision, and that will reveal the character. But it's reinforced and it's created through the repetitive little decisions. That's bracha milashon brecha. Elul is the best time of the year to start thinking of the importance of little decisions. And yeshiva is the best place to start doing that. I don't mean to say that you haven't done it at other points in your life. None of you would be here if you haven't already had a lot of success in your younger years. But we're all here, all of us, to take hopefully whatever successes we've had in life, in learning, about Hashem, school, etc. previously, we're all here to take that to the next level, and maybe even more than just one level. The way to do that and the place to do that is with the little decisions and starting in Elul here. There's so many things. I don't want to give too many examples also because I can't even think of all of them. But you could just imagine on a day-to-day basis pushing yourself to get up even a few minutes earlier to get to Minyan on time. Pushing yourself to get to Seder on time. All sorts of different things. Little decisions. Did I remember to make a bracha? Didn't I make the bracha? So many things that, again, it's just natural as teenagers. Perhaps we've glossed over at earlier stages of our life. Because after all, they weren't the big thing. But you have to realize we're at a different stage of life now. And who you really will become, and especially what kind of year you will have, I can promise you, it will overwhelmingly be determined by the millions of little decisions that you make. Not the few big ones this year, but all the little ones, the day in and the day out. And the key, it's not a guarantee that you always make the right decision. End of our kaseh. But the key is to view them not as a kal. Just, what's the big deal? It's just one afternoon seder. It's just one chavrusa. It's just one shir. It's just one minyan. But to treat each one of them not as a kal, but as a brecha. Each one leads to the next and creates momentum. Like a spring, and you will benefit from that downstream. That's point number one. Point number two. The pasuk tells us later on in the parsha in Perek Yudalid, Es ze tochlu mikol asher b'mayim, kol asher lo snapir b'kaskeses tochelu. We have the introduction, unlike other types of species which we can eat, which we've heard about already in the Torah, but the issue of kosher fish is introduced to us in this week's parsha. And we are told that there are two simanim. What is interesting, and I want to frame the second point in light of, is the Medrash tells us that the Jewish people are compared to fish. The Yidgu Larov Bekarev Haaretz is a blessing that we have. Vayidgu, Miloshon Dag. The Jewish people are compared to a fish. And with that background in mind, it's striking that two of the great gedolim of the last generation, ones who often disagreed on certain things, but at least on this, they come together very beautifully. The late Lubavitcher Rebbe and Rav Alyashiv Zatzal. Again, if you know anything about the yeshiva world, you know that as great as they both were, and as many devoted followers as they had, and as much as they may have had in common, there were some very strong disagreements between the Lithuanian Haredi world that Rav Alyashiv was the leader of, and the Chabad world that the Lubavitcher Rebbe was the leader of. But at least on this point, perhaps it's a simon that it's true, they both make more or less the same insight, the Lubavitcher Rebbe and Rav Alyashiv. And they say that if Jews are compared to fish, then the simone kashrus, the symbols of what makes a kosher fish, must also symbolically represent what? What makes a kosher Jew. What are snapir and kaskesis, fins and scales? What does that represent? So they both say the following, which I find to be, again, it's obviously drush, but I find it to be very compelling and really even inspiring. Kaskesis, scales. What do you use? What does a fish use scales for? That's protection. Protection from the outside, from dangers, from outside influences. Kaskeses, having scales as a person, represents having the internal fortitude or making the decisions, siyagim, if you want to call it that, or allow us to maintain our integrity. We have a certain moral compass, a certain conscience, but we're all human. So the Torah tells us, Lo susura achrei nechem achrei levav, right? We can all be swayed and all be persuaded. Kaskesis is that part of our spiritual armor which we build and every one of us needs. None of us are so strong that we can live without it. That type of spiritual armor to create a little bit of a buffer, a little bit of a barrier to protect us so we can maintain our integrity, stay true to our values. That's what kaskesis represents. And a Jew without those can't be kosher fully. So what then is a snapir? What are fins? So they suggest that that is almost the opposite midah. Fins are used, of course, by the fish to propel, to go forward, to swim, to move. And that, they suggest, represent the second simon that every one of us have to have. And that is, we have to have the characteristics, that spiritual ability to not just be happy and settled with who we are right now, but rather to be swimming, to move forward, to look, to explore new areas. They don't use these terms, but I would suggest that really what these two things are symbolizing, if you wanted to crunch them down even more, is that this is what is Yira Shamayim on the one hand, and Ahavas Hashem on the other. We're often, and it's a good thing, attracted to the Ahavas Hashem, the positive, growing, new, exciting. But I think very often, we're a little too confident in ourselves. And we don't always realize that we need, it's critical, the Yira Shemayim. Right? We just read last week's Parsha. Ma Hashem Elokecha Dorash Mimach Ki'im. Right? Lira. Yira Shemayim is the bedrock. Yira Shemayim means, again, like the scales, like the kaskeses. Knowing something, there's something special and holy internal. Hashem gave it as a gift. We've been developing it, each of us in our own way, the last 18 years. And protecting that, because there are outside forces which are not healthy for our neshama. And we need that as our bedrock. But it's not sufficient. It is not sufficient just to say, you know what? I can look at myself in the mirror and say, I've done pretty well the last 18 years. I've been successful in my community, in my shul, in my school, in my family. I'm well respected. I'm sure you all are. That's why you're here. But it's not enough. You have to have the snapir. You have to have the fins. You have to have the drive to grow and to propel yourself forward. I remember many years ago, before Aliyah, before I moved to Baltimore, I was living in Riverdale at the time. And Mori Varabi, Rav Rosenzweig, was invited from YU to come to Riverdale for Shabbos. And in the course of one of his speeches, it was actually this time of year, he quoted Rav Lichtenstein Zatzal. And he said that in a different context, he had once heard from Rav Lichtenstein that there are two types of tshuva. One type of tshuva, the way I recall him formulating it, one type of tshuva is where a person does an honest cheshbon ha-nefesh. You got to look yourself in a mirror, and sometimes that mirror has to have a magnifying glass. An honest cheshbon ha-nefesh, and we ask ourselves, are we truly living up to our highest values? Are we truly being honest with our convictions and our most deeply held beliefs? Or are perhaps we a little hypocritical? Are we following short? It's not the kind of thing we enjoy thinking about every day, but that's a form of tshuva, which at least periodically we have to do, a type of cheshbon ha-nefesh. We know what's right, but let's actually pause and think about, am I really doing what's right? Am I living up to it? That's one type of tshuva. But then Rav Lichtenstein evidently, or apparently said, as I heard it from Rav Rosenzweig, there's a second kind of tshuva, which is more rare, it does not have to happen as frequently, but at least once a year, at least once a year, he said. We need to have a second form of tshuva. And that is not where we ask ourselves, am I living up to my values? But rather, we reevaluate the values themselves. Do I have the right values? And most of us, I don't think we would say we have the wrong values, but really the better question is, are my values ambitious enough? Am I really asking of myself enough? Could I be pushing myself even more? Could I have even higher, more lofty goals in values? Not how am I doing compared to my goals. Right? If any of you have ever, whether it's in a particular athletic team or just in general, an exercise regimen, right? People have goals and they write them down. I mean, if the successful people do this, right? And they look back and they were working on how fast they could run or swim or what percentage of foul shots they could hit or what their three-point percentage would be. And you have goals and you check it, and that's fine. And that's important to know. Am I doing what I needed to do? But every now and then, we have to look back and say, maybe those aren't even the right goals. That was good for me last year. But now I need different goals. Higher goals. That's the difference between snapir and kas keses. The scales are to make sure we stay true to the goals that we had. The snapir is to help us push forward and look for new vistas and even higher and more ambitious goals. I know that virtually every person I talk to at some point in the application process or interview process, this came up in one form or another. The reason to come to Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael for the year, and certainly the reason to come to Gush, is not only because you want to work on your kas keses, not only because you want to really develop your Yir Shamayim, although that is the absolute bedrock, but this is not a year to be satisfied, and this is certainly not a place to come so you can feel satisfied. This is a place to push yourself, each of us at our own level, each of us at our own speed, but each of us are here to grow, and we have to have that double mindset, protect, but also to explore and to grow. That's the simon, the two simonim, I should say, that we need to truly grow and to be successful. And last but not least, I want to end with the following. The pasuk tells us in Perek Yud Beis, pasuk Aleph, Eilach chokim v'hamishpatim asher tishmurun la'asod be'aretz asher adnasan Hashem Elokei Avotecha l'cha l'rishta kol hayomim asher atem chayim al adama. These are the mitzvos, the chukim u'mishpatim that Hashem tells you to observe where? In Eretz Yisrael. The Eretz asher nasan Hashem Elokei Avotecha l'cha l'rishta. The question is obvious. It's not true. Meaning, it is true you have to keep mitzvot in Eretz Yisrael. But it's not true that you only have to keep mitzvot in Eretz Yisrael. Why would the Torah, in this pasuk, make the mitzvot, these chukum and mishpatim that we're commanded to do, why would it make that hinging or depending on the land which I promised that I'll bring you to? It's not true. It applied before they got to Eretz Yisrael, and it certainly applies when you're not in Eretz Yisrael. So there's a very fascinating commentary on the Torah, I don't know if most of you would have heard of it at this point, called the Kesava HaKabbalah. The Kesava HaKabbalah was one of the Talmidim Muvhakim of Rabbi Akiva Eiger. And he lived at a time, he was a contemporary a little bit also of the Malbim. He, like the Malbim, used his Parish Al HaTorah to fight what was then the nascent reform movement. And he has a lot of effort and a lot of interpretations that are combating all sorts of things that were very, very avant-garde or popular then, such as biblical criticism and things like that. Very, very important and interesting Perush al-HaTorah. And the Ketav HaKabbalah here on this pasuk To answer this question really is bothered by a second question, which is, what does the pasuk mean at the end? It was talking about the eretz asher nasan Hashem lokecha keivotecha l'rishta kalim asher atem chayim al ha'adama. What is the al ha'adama at the end of the pasuk? So says the Ksava HaKabbalah, that can't be referring to Eretz Yisrael, the same land that was already referred to. Because then it would have just said, Aleha, on it. It's a different term. What's it doing there? And because of this, again, it's a long essay. Bottom line, he's convinced, he proves, that Adama at the end of the Pasuk, that's a reference to Chutz Laretz. So the question really isn't a question according to him. The opening of the pasuk says, yes, these are all the mitzvahs, the chukum mishpatim, you have to keep in Eretz Yisrael. And the end of the pasuk is coming to teach you, even in Chutz Laretz, you also have to keep them. Okay, maybe there's more to talk about that, but I'm running out of time quickly. So let's move to his second point, which is the point I want to really emphasize for you to conclude. And that is, succumbs longer to, his name is Rav Mecklenburg, and a little bit of a darshan, similar to what we saw from Rav Hirsch. He asked the etymological question. I don't usually have so many etymology things in my Divrei Torah, but here we got two for the price of one. Says the Ksav HaKabbalah, again, assuming you accept his reading of the Pasuk, how come Israel is always referred to with the language of Eretz? And according to him, Chutz La'aretz, again, it's Chutz La'aretz, but Aretz is Eretz Israel, and Chutz La'aretz is referred to as Adama. Why is the out of Eretz Israel Adama? And he points out in Brachos 2, Bar Pri Adama refers to anywhere, but if you're making an Allah Gef, an Allah Eitz, it's always Ahad, right? We all pray Eretz. It's always, Eretz always refers to Eretz Yisrael. Why is Eretz Eretz Yisrael, and Adama is outside of the land of Israel? And again, he suggests something, again, a little drushy based on this diuk in the language. And he says as follows, Eretz Yisrael is always considered that language of Eretz. Why? It's Miloshon Rats, running, movement. Chutz La'aretz is Adama. Why? Miloshon domain. Domain means inanimate, something that stands still. Now the message seems to be, and certainly the message that I take from this insight, is that Eretz Yisrael is by nature a land of rats, of movement, of growth. We all do, in Emirat Hashem, we all will continue to do, whether we're living there or visiting there, we all do hopefully many good things throughout the world, wherever we're coming from or going back to, in Chutz La'aretz. But what he's getting at, and again, at least my own life experience, I think this is absolutely true, is that even though the mitzvos should be done as a eretz, with passion and movement and growth, no matter where we are, but when we're in Chutz La'aretz, you're going against the grain. Because Chutz La'aretz by nature is Adama. It's domain. It's not about movement and growth. You have to interject it when you're there. But when you're in Eretz Yisrael, says the Ksava HaKabbalah, the land itself is ruts. The land itself, again, I assume this is what he means. The land itself by its very nature is growth oriented. Eretz Yisrael is the place that gives a person a movement to godliness, to greatness, to true accomplishment. Again, this also came up, I think, various points in some of the interview processes, but someone once asked me, you know, would the yeshiva be just the same if we picked up the whole building and we landed in Muncie? Or, I don't know what the equivalent of Muncie is in England. Is there an equivalent of Muncie? Could there be an equivalent to Muncie anywhere? Unclear. It's a question for further thought, perhaps. But if we just picked up, we found some big tract of land, and it was the same Rebbeim and the same Torah, would it be the same? And the answer is clearly not. Part of what makes Gush Gush, and part of the reason that you're here, is not just the Torah and the Rebbeim, but not only that it's in Eretz Yisrael, but that Eretz Yisrael is part of everything that we do. Not just because this room, come Sunday, will be filled with many native Eretz Yisrael Talmidim, but because the whole mentality of Eretz Yisrael, I don't just mean politically or Zionistically, although that's fine too, but spiritually, the characteristic of Eretz Yisrael, the idea of growth-oriented, that infuses everything that we do. It comes from the land itself. Here, growth is natural. That doesn't mean it will happen accidentally. It doesn't mean that you don't need to be deliberate about it. But here, when you're ready to grow, when you're ready to commit yourself, you're going with the grain, with the movement. You don't have to push yourself against the way you may have had to in high school or when you go back to college. Here, it's with the grain. This is what it means to be in Eretz Yisrael. Not in land of Adama, but a land of Eretz, of movement and of ruts. And I'll just conclude with one more minute. It's a beautiful story. I overheard it. I heard the story this summer. I don't remember where I heard it from exactly, but it's a beautiful Hasidic Maisa. Apparently it's even true, which is a plus with Hasidic stories, if you can find them. They're all good, but they're not all true. I think I once heard somebody say, maybe Rav Lichtenstein said this, right? If you believe in all of them, you're a fool, and if you believe in none of them, you're an apikoros, or something like that. Anyway, but this one I think is actually not only beautiful, but also true. And it's about the second Lubavitcher Rebbe, who became known as the Tzemach Tzedek. And he was playing outside with his friends, and apparently they had some contest. His father was the Baal HaTanya, the founder of Chassidus, Chabad Chassidus was in his room. Anyway, they had some two tall, I can't remember exactly how it went, like pillars or something like that, or parts of a wall. And they had a race who could go across. It's very high and steep, and who could go across one day, fastest. And this little kid, Menachem Mendel, not the Menachem Mendel who became the Rebbe who we mentioned earlier, but the first Menachem Mendel, became the Tzemach Tzedek. He won the race. And he was so excited, he came into his father and he ran and said, "How did you run the race? How did you do it so well? Weren't you scared?" To which his son evidently responded to him, "I never looked down. I only looked up." That's also how you'll be successful. Don't look down. Don't be scared of failing. Don't be scared of what happens if I have a good morning Seder now, but I have a bad afternoon Seder. Don't be scared of what will happen next year, in 2 years, and in 5 years. Can I keep up all the things I'm going to gain in yeshiva? Don't look down. Just look up and move forward. If you focus on your growth, if you focus on your success, if you focus on all the positive things that you will be doing, almost without trying, almost. You have to try. There's just so much going on here that's good that you'll be thrown into. If you focus on the good, if you keep on looking up, I promise you, you keep all these ideas in mind, Yemir Tzah Hashem, Re'eh will have been a perfectly opportune and perfectly appropriate Shabbos to start Elon, ending the year and starting the year with these messages. It is my hope, it is my tefillah from all of us here at the yeshiva, that the yeshiva becomes your home in every sense of the word, that the people sitting near you become your brothers in every sense of the word, and all of us, we feel like a family, and Yemir Tzah Hashem will look back on this year, together, all of us, being a year of tremendous growth, spiritual growth, Avodas Hashem, and learning and accomplishment. Have a wonderful Shabbos, and everyone should have an incredible, incredible year.